My guest is Roy Russell, a fourth generation from the original first settlers in Plymouth Grant part of Fort Fairfield. The first survey of this part of the town was in 1806 by Park Hall. First settler, Michael Russell, in 1816. Roy, where was the first place that he landed in Fort Fairfield?
Well, the first place in Fort Fairfield was on the south side of the Aroostook River, just at the point where it crosses the New Brunswick border.
Did I understand you to say that when he first settled, he made a mistake and found himself on the Canadian side of the border?
Yes, he settled a farm, the first farm below the border, and realized he was still in New Brunswick, and had to move one lot up to be in the United States.
Yes, no, we think of these people moving here. What was their occupation when they landed, when they moved in here?
Well, a major occupation was cutting pine for the British. They cut it and squared it and floated it down the river to Fredericton.
Yes, at that time there were other settlers coming in. He wasn't the only person here.
No. There was the next settler was James Fitzherbert. He moved further up the river to a brook, and he is in Letter D Plantation. And from there, the next settler was John Dorsey, who moved further out on the Dorsey Road and settled a lot still in D. Letter D Plantation.
Yes, I think the dates of these two gentlemen was in about 1820.
Well, shortly after the original settlers.
Yes. Roy, about this time when settlers were working in the lumber along the river and before the Aroostook War developed, how many settlers do you think were along the river here at that time?
There'd be approximately 40.
And they worked the lumber industry and shipped their wood into Canada. Yes, New Brunswick. Mike Russell came here in 1816, and he had a son, John?
Yes.
We hear about John is that you have a naturalization paper.
Yes. 1844. He was naturalized in Holton.
You have the original paper?
Yes.
The original settler, now Michael Russell, where is he buried?
He's buried in a Catholic cemetery about 6 miles north of Fort Fairfield, nearly at the Caribou line.
And he isn't the only early settler buried there?
Oh no, there's several of the early settlers there.
This farm that you live on, this isn't the original Michael Russell farm, but it was established here when?
This farm was established in 1866, and it's lot 56 of the Plymouth Grant.
Your father was here before you?
Yes.
And his father?
Yes.
Something interesting that you mentioned to me a while ago, Roy, was about a British coin.
Well, my sister has a British coin that Sam Russell gave her that was found on the original, the first farm in Fort Fairfield that was settled, where the British troops had set up their quarters.
But no date or anything distinguishable?
The not distinguishable to the to a common person.
Without the aid of glass or something?
Yeah, the, a specialist probably could tell what the coin was.
In the annual town report of 1899 of the municipal officers of Fort Fairfield, we have some interesting topics about the schools of the town, written by the superintendent of the school. At the close of the fall term, there was only money enough to run the winter term for 3 or 4 weeks. Your school committee decided that a term of 3 weeks would be unprofitable. It became necessary then either to have no winter term or to overdraw the common school account. We finally decided to run the winter term 6 weeks and overdraw the account, making the school year 26 weeks instead of 30. The bill for transportation is larger than in previous years, yet it is less expensive to transport pupils than to run a school. The Foss, McIntosh, John Haynes, and Varney schools are closed, and the pupils are transported at the following rates. Foss, $5 per week, McIntosh, $5 per week, John Haynes, $5 per week, the Varney School, $4.50 per week, for a total of $19.50 per week. We balance this against the average cost of teachers at that time was $6.75 per week. Wood cost 50 cents, a janitor 35 cents per week. For a total of $7.60 per week, the average cost of running a school. There are four schools. Four times $7.60 is $30.40. The cost of running the four schools, less the cost of transportation, is $10.90. It therefore costs $10.90 per week less to transport the children from these four schools than to run the school. The weekly cost of running your schools in the town is $285. Multiply this by the number of weeks, 30 for example, and you have $8,550. Take $3,700, the probable amount from the state. From this, you have $4,850, the amount necessary for 30 weeks of school, which added to the overdraft makes about $5,500. I would therefore recommend that the town raise $5,500 to pay the overdraft and for 30 weeks of school, $4,500 for 26 weeks of school, $4,000 for 24 weeks of school. I would recommend that other appropriations be the same as last year. For a free high school, $1,200. For free textbooks, $800. For furnishings and repairs, $500. Respectfully submitted, H.F. Kellogg, Superintendent of Schools.
This is taken from the Register and Town History of 1904. It's a kind of amusing incident. Money was very scarce in Aroostook Settlement in 1860, and oats, buckwheat, and shingles were a legal tender. At one of the spring town meetings, an old farmer made a motion that the school teachers be paid in oats and buckwheat, but the motion failed to pass.
One of the other problems that existed in some of the rural schools, at least, was the toilet arrangements. An article in the annual report of the municipal officers in the year 1909 reads as follows. The toilet arrangement in the rural schools are disgustingly filthy, and under present arrangements it seems impossible to better them. The new schoolhouses, the Longfellow, Strickland, and Haley, should be fitted with separate toilet rooms, one for the boys and one for the girls, each opening out of the schoolroom as per my plans for the Grange Hall School. This plan has already been tried in two schools in Easton, and it works admirably. By this plan, the toilet rooms are under the control and immediate supervision of the teacher, and no pupil can commit a nuisance without being detected. The old buildings should be fitted up in a similar manner as fast as possible.
This is taken from the annual town report of 1909. It's about the manual training in this, they want to introduce it in the schools. Farming in Aroostook County today is largely a mechanical operation. We prepare our land by the use of machines. We plant our potatoes with machines. We hoe them with machines. We dig them with machines. The only part of the work which cannot be done with a machine is picking of the potatoes after they are dug. There's not in our school curriculum or today one single study that teaches our boys how to use machines. I believe that manual training should be instituted at once to train our boys for their life's work. I believe that this manual training should be begun in the fifth grade so that it might reach the greatest number of students possible, and that it should be continued throughout the high school.
From the annual report of 1912 in regard to the school superintendent's report, he says, I believe that an agricultural course would naturally appeal to the boy who doesn't care for algebra, geometry, and those subjects which tend to fit a student for a higher education. I have some scholars in school who will undoubtedly go back to the farm and make a success in life. They are not stars in mathematics and wouldn't be if they had Archimedes for a teacher. They have the best ears I ever saw. What we tell them goes in one ear and out the other. These few are an irritant to the high school pedagogue. Teaching them is, as Kipling says, the scientific vivisection of one nerve till it is raw. Yet there should be a place for them in education, and the practical usually appeals to them.
This is taken from the annual town report of 1911. It has to do with the fixing of the schools, painting. In the Munson School, under the wise direction of the teacher, Miss Verna Jameson, $51 has been raised and expended. The pupils here bought material for tinning ceilings and papering walls, also for one coat of paint upon the woodwork, and a nice desk was purchased for the teacher. Three beautiful pictures were bought, and about $8 worth of books to start a library.
One other problem of the schools was sickness in the schools. On account of diphtheria, our schools are not so far along as usual at this season. The presence of the disease during the fall and early winter proved a great disaster to school interests. After some irregular stopping and starting, all of the schools were closed November the 22nd by order of the Board of Health, and not started again till January 6. Many schoolhouses and books were thoroughly disinfected at large trouble and costs. Under such circumstances, the best results could not be expected, yet there have been obtained results that are good. Although Fort Fairfield has escaped from the recent smallpox scourge far more fortunately than many of her sister towns, yet the expenses consequence on its nearness and presence have been heavy. About 1,400 people have been vaccinated at the town's expense. The necessary quarantining, fumigating, and other expenses in connection with this disease and that of diphtheria last winter put up nearly $1,000. For closely watching these contagious diseases, Fort Fairfield people owe to their Board of Health a debt of gratitude of which many seem wholly unaware. the town's had various problems, and one of the problems that they had at this time was concerning the poor people in the town, paupers. The item from the 19-3 municipal officer's report reads as follows, and I want you to listen very closely to this. I'll leave out the names of the people mentioned, but I want you to pay close attention to the language that was used in a town report at that time. The expense for transient paupers has been small during the past year, but those for permanent ones large, owing in part to the generally prevailing high prices. Some very radical changes should be made in the case of the family. This family consists of 10 members. The recent great generosity of Mr. toward this family, however, seems to indicate that its members are to remain paupers no longer. If possible, Mr. X and wife should be separated, and Mr. X compelled to earn his own living if, as many claim, he is physically able to do so. We recommend comfortable homes and generous treatment for our town's deserving poor, but we are reluctantly compelled to counsel extremely economical and perhaps even harsh treatment for the pauper who so coolly walk in upon us from other areas. Roy, I want to ask you a couple of questions about the snow roads that we had here during the winter. What was meant by the term yes ma'ams?
Well, it was a dip in the road where when the horses and the sled come along, the front end of the sled would dip, and you get a chattering of your teeth from us.
It caused a tremendous bump to the sled, and it would also cause great discomfort to the horses because the neck yoke on the pole would frequently hit the horses under the chin and nearly knock their head off. Now, one other thing about these snow roads. In the wintertime, what happened to a covered bridge? How do you get across a covered bridge in the wintertime?
Well, they usually they hauled snow and covered the planks that was the base of the bridge. They covered them up with snow so the sleds would slide easier.
Yes, why I bring this up is that there's an item in the town report paying the man a certain amount for snowing the bridge.
We're talking with Annie Kernan, and she's going to talk first about the covered bridge in Fort Fairfield. It was torn down in 1899, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And now what do you remember about the bridge?
Well, it was just a plain covered bridge, that's all, and there wasn't anything.
It had little windows without glass.
Yeah, and that was all. And then in the wintertime, there wasn't any snow could get in, so they had to haul the snow and put it in the bridge so the sleds could forward for the potatoes.
Mm-hmm. And you remember when it was torn down, when the iron bridge was built?
I remember when it was torn down, when the iron bridge was built. And when they put up the iron bridge, they had to cross the ice down by the old starch factory. There was an old starch factory across the river there.
This is the crew, the men that were working.
Yeah.
They traveled across the ice.
Yeah, everybody did.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody.
I see what you mean.
They couldn't. There was no way no other way of getting across the upper river and down the river and everywhere that was on the other side of the river.
You mean they tore the covered bridge down before the iron bridge was built?
Oh yes.
Yes. And so they had to use the ice to travel.
They had to use the ice. Begin building it in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
and they're beginning to tear that down and put up the piers and everything. And then they all had to cross the ice down here, right by the old starch factory.
And didn't you say some of the men boarded with you that were working?
Yeah, John Lundy was the man that built that iron bridge, the old iron bridge. And he lived at and stayed at our house.
Mm-hmm. Now, could you tell something about your schooling when you went to school?
I was ahead of my class all the time. No, I can't tell much about it. I went to the first grade down there. And that was
in the Hacker School?
In the Hacker School. And then we went upstairs to school. And then after that, we went down to the old grammar school at Barron.
Yes, but the Hacker School, where was this Hacker School
right
then?
Right where the Sade Hacker's house is now.
And this building is still in town, though?
It's still in town. It's up on Ellen Street. They moved it up there and made apartments out of it.
Mm-hmm. And then, now, the school that burned, can you tell us about that?
Well, we was all in school, and the thing, and there was a man by the name of Octave Searway, was a janitor, and he didn't know how to run the furnace, wasn't used to it. And something happened down then. Nobody knew. The place was on fire. It came up through the petitions. And everybody got out. There wasn't any hurt or anything else. Everybody got their clothes and got out.
But you had never had a fire drill in school?
Oh, never, no. Didn't know what the fire drill was.
And did you say one of the teachers locked the door?
Yeah, one of the teachers upstairs locked one of the, you see, they had the different classrooms. In her class, she thought there was some rumpus going downstairs, didn't know what was going on, and she locked the door, but they all got out. Wasn't anyone hurt or anything.
This was right in the winter time,
right,
though.
No, it was the 6th of January, I think it was, mm-hmm. Right along there somewhere. Have you got a picture of that?
We're talking with Mary Jane Kernan Glue, and she's going to tell us some about her father who delivered mail. And Mary Jane, do you know about what year he started?
Well, I would think it was 1898.
He was the first?
One of the first mail carriers that they had in this town. He and Bert Eastman and Huey Kernan.
Huey Kernan was his name.
Yeah.
Now, could you tell us where his mail route was?
He went out to the Dorsey Road and crossed over and went up through where they called it the Dane Settlement at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came out the Forest Avenue Road.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I found that other thing.
And it was 22 miles that he went. Each day with an old pony and an old horse.
Mm-hmm. Now, was he required to take any kind of exam to get this job?
They were required to take the exams, and he and Bert Eastman were the only two that had passed them.
And where did they go to take the exam, do you know?
Down to Houghton, I think.
Probably. Mary Jane, did you tell me you remembered something about the town poor farm?
Well, I remember riding by it with somebody, I don't know who, and they told me that it was a poor farm. It was a great big white building, and it sat on the right-hand side of the road going down toward Easton.
It was on the Houghton Road?
Yes.
And this is what now is the Roy Webb farm?
I would imagine it was right there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. fellow belongs to Davy Hunt.
Thank you.